For almost a decade, writer Whiti Hiriaka has been fleshing out the mythical story of a monster bird woman. Now she's published a novel called Kurungaituku, a name Whiti's known since childhood. But the bird woman's story has traditionally been told from the perspective of Hatupatu, the man she loved desperately, but who ultimately betrayed her. Whiti tells Kurungaituku's story in the first person, from when birds called her into existence to her love for Hatupatu, the upheaval that ravaged her world, and her time roaming the underworlds. Whiti starts with a reading from the novel.
We started something, a quickening, the spark of something. We made fire. I stood on the soft mahui as he rubbed with his kai komako stick. I stood with my back turned to him, trusting that he would keep the sparks from my wingtips, trusting that he would not burn me. My trust was freely given then. Even though I could not see him, every other one of my senses was attuned to his presence, as if, without my eyes, I could see him more clearly. The change in the air between us as his arm and hand moved closer to me. I breathed in the smell of the veins in his forearms engorging with blood. I held the breath until my head felt light, not wanting to lose the small part of him and me to the atmosphere. I first met you by the fireside, Hatupatu said. This was not true. We had met in the forest long before we had made fire together. I tipped my head back, my long neck curving to the sky, so I could look him in the eye while my back was turned. It was a risk. Sometimes it was hard to predict his reaction to me and my body. There were times when he despised me for reminding him that I was something not human. Times when the space between us was too great for our minds to meet, and in those spaces, his fear would easily tip into violence. He laughed. I chatted my beak. Explain. And he laughed harder. And stories. I first met you in stories. He told me my story. His words bewitched me and nearly undid me. I could feel the borders of my reality fraying. Stitch by stitch, he was unpicking me. The idea of me warped by his story, by his imagination. Kurungaituku, he said, and I was undone again. His voice twisted my name around me, binding me to him, and my heart betrayed me, beating as if I was the prey and he, the hunter. Hatupatu smiled. Come, let me tell you a story. We started something, a quickening, the spark of something. We made fire.
Whiti, first of all, should I be ashamed of myself that I don't know this story and this remarkable bird woman?
I don't think so. I think it's very much a story that's told in the central North Island. So it's very much a Te Arawa story. It's a story I've grown up with for a very long time. So I grew up in Taupō, but had lots of whānau in Rotorua. So we'd travel to Rotorua most weekends to visit whānau. And on the way, you stop at Hatupatu's Rock and give a koha. So the story always naturally came up with Hatupatu and his rock. But being a hoha kid, I always wanted to know more about Kurungaituku, the bird woman in the story. So that's kind of what fascinated me about it. It's that we never heard from her point of view. It was always from Hatupatu's point of view. As I grew up and grew older, her voice, her story kept coming back to me. So I thought, I'll give it a go. I'll give her voice a go.
So through Hatupatu's eyes, what was his perspective of her?
Well, she's a monster, an ogress. And in that story, it was very much about him tricking Kurungaituku into... So she collects a lot of taonga from around the place. And he's astounded by her collection of beautiful things. So when she takes him from the forest and nurses him back to health, he's astounded by all her things. and he tricks her into going to find some more birds to feed him. And while she's away, he kills all of her pets. So she lives with a lot of other birds and lizards and things. He kills all of those, takes her things, and thinks that he's got away with it. But a small meromero goes and tells Kurangai Tuku what's happened. So when I was reading it, or was being read the story when I was small, the exciting part was the chase between Hatupatu. So Hatupatu is trying to get home to Makoya Island, and Kurangai Tuku is right behind him, chasing him. And then you get to the part where he hides in his rock, which you can still see. It's on the road between Taupō and Rotorua if you're going past Aotearoa. So you can stop at the rock and you can see where she's gouged the rock, which is always kind of cool to go and have a look at that.
When she's described as an ogress, for example, I mean, that's a really powerful image of her. But as you have explored her life and told her story in this way in first person, what image of her have you formed?
Yeah, that was a really a long journey, I think, I guess, from nothingness. In the novel, she starts from nothingness, so she's incorporeal, but she's imagined first by birds. So I imagined her kind of flitting from form to form until she finds the form of the kōtuku, so white heron or egret, I guess, great egret, which in like mythology, Māori mythology, is a bird that's marginal between worlds as well as marginal between land and water, as we think of it for birds. So yeah, I thought of her as a kōtuku, but kind of a giant kōtuku. So she's fed in my story by other beings' dreams of her. So she grows with the more minds that are thinking of her. And then when humans arrive in Aotearoa, New Zealand, their dreams of her kind of slowly mould her into something different that's in between a bird and a human, because the stories, I guess, are clashing or moulding together. So she becomes this different thing. So in between a bird and a human.
It's really beautiful. And you take your time to do this, to describe as the birds create her. The birds were first to recognise me. They called me down from the mist and I was formed by their song. I just love that line. And she'd fly with the ruru and she'd fly with the korimako. And then you had that one little line, and then the world changed, and how the birds knew that something was awry and she knew. And just such a beautiful relationship between her and the birds. I mean, it's not picture perfect from the birds' perspective. You know, there's a price for them to pay, but it's a remarkable connection.
Yeah, what I love about the character is that she is quite complicated, and her relationships with birds and humans is very complicated. So she's not quite either of them, and she's a very curious sort of being. So she's, I always thought of her as a collector, both of stories and of minds. So she does collect minds in a very graphic way.
In a very physical way.
In a very physical way. She's very visceral, quite literally. But I liked that. I liked that she never loses her predatory edge to her. Even though we're in first person and that naturally makes you feel more sympathetic for her, I liked kind of jolting the reader out of it every now and then, but reminding them that she is dangerous, that she has spent her life looking for the next story, and perhaps as a reader that might be you. So I liked that aspect of her.
She's utterly self-aware, isn't she? I am a liar, a thief, a murderer. You know, I killed the birds of my flock for a hunger that was more than physical. You know, and then she challenges us. Well, maybe you see yourself in me, which is just what happens in many ways when you're reading who you relate to, and then you can get uncomfortable when it's not the nice side of your nature that is being brought out in the reading of. So I her self-awareness is key, isn't it?
I think so. And I liked, like you said, like that it confronts the reader with their own, I guess, culpability in storytelling. I've been thinking a lot the past few years about what storytelling is, and I say that a little bit in whichever end of Kurangai Tuku you open up first, that the story really lives between the teller and the listener, or the writer and the reader, that there is a relationship in the middle there that we both participate in. I liked kind of pushing the reader a little bit. So I've been thinking about writing as an act of manaakitanga. So thinking about making a reader kind of comfortable in the space and feel safe, but within that safe space, pushing them and confronting them with their own sort of biases or, yeah, what we bring to a story ourselves. So, yeah, I really liked exploring that with Kurangaituku. I think having a character that is so, because she's ancient, she has been around since the beginning of time, since the depths of Te Kore, to whoever knows when, sometime in the future when it all collapses again. So she has this very, I guess, vast way of viewing time, space, and herself. So it was fun to explore that with her.
See, I hear the word fun, and here I was, one of my questions for you is saying, assuming that this would be in many ways an uncomfortable place to be in her memories, in her voice, in her soul, in her motivations, because she is challenging. She's a really challenging character, and to give her voice, I mean, that's that. I would have thought at the end of it, you might have had a cup of tea and a lie down. I don't know.
Oh, no, very much so. It was very uncomfortable. The reason it has taken me so long to write it, so I keep saying it's taken 9 years, but it's actually much longer than that. I just like to tell myself it was 9 years because it doesn't feel as as oppressive as the time it actually took. It's about between, maybe I was on my second draft and I just realised I wasn't a good enough writer to write her the way she needed to be written. So I kind of sloped off and wrote another novel to get my skills up. But also, I wasn't in a place, personally, to delve into the vulnerability of it. She is very open and vulnerable. But yes, it was very hard sometimes to leave her behind and be me. Particularly, I guess, because, again, in first person, you get kind of subsumed by the character. So there were times when I'd be walking around, like, muttering about humans and kind of forgetting that I, in fact, am a human. So I had to figure out ways of leaving her behind. But it was fun as well. I mean, I don't think you can sustain a novel unless it's something that gives you some sort of juice. I mean, it's not fun as in ha-ha-ha, kind of day at the park sort of fun, but I think the challenge of trying to write a character that is not human at all, wholly not human, trying to figure out how that kind of being would view the world was really stimulating, I guess, is probably a better word for it rather than fun. But yeah, it was a great puzzle to kind of figure out.
Her love for Hatupatu, would you say it was true love? It's certainly obsessive love. And and as when betrayal comes in, it gets twisted to the extreme with her because she has these remarkable powers. But the core love story, how do you see that? And how do you, having had Hatupatu's version of her, what is her story of him?
Yeah, I think twisted is a great way to describe it. She's never really experienced love, I don't think, until she meets Hatupatu. And even then, from my point of view, I don't think she really experienced love then either. She might have felt something for him, but it was definitely not reciprocated from Hatupatu's point of view. And from the, like, in the stories that I read as a youngster, there was no sort of love between them. But interestingly, in some of the tellings of the Parako, he is taken as a husband rather than a mokai. So most of the time it's mokai, but in some of the retellings, he's taken as a husband, which I thought was really interesting. So I kind of went with that a little bit. I think if she was honest with herself, the true love of Kurangaituku's life is Kurangaituku, is this the idea of her being in itself. Yeah, I can't separate how twisted, I guess, her love for Hatupatu becomes from herself. And it sort of echoed later on when she meets Hinenui Te Pō. That relationship as well is akin to love, but it's not quite love. They both see themselves reflected in each other, and that's what they fall in love with rather than the whole other person. So, yeah, I'm playing a little bit with what love is and what true love is, I guess.
Whiti Hiriaka, Kurangai Tā Toku is published by Huria. Whiti will be talking at the upcoming Lit Crawl Festival in Wellington.